Blog Talk Radio.
From the Blog Talk Radio studio right here in the heart of Hudson County. Folks, you know, it's always in Union City, New Jersey. Insider NJ proudly brings to you the two-time award-winning politically direct, and I am the professor, Fernando Uribe. I want to thank you all for tuning in here this week. Great program, great guest coming up in just a few moments. And, of course, I want to thank you all for tuning in from wherever and however you may be doing so throughout the Garden State. And, of course, throughout the U.S. of A. Now, you can write to the show's inbox at any time, ladies and gentlemen. It's politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. Once again, if you have a suggestion for a guest or any topics you think I should be covering in future episodes, write to me, politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. I do answer my emails promptly, so write to me. I love to hear from you. Don't forget to follow the show on Instagram, @politicallydirectnj. Also, hit me up on my own Instagram, @ProfessorFernandoUribe. I know many of you enjoy my Instagram stories, which are full of politically incorrect humor, without question, sports memes, politics, motivational stuff, pro wrestling, anything that I think is funny or is inappropriate. Yeah, you'll probably see it on my Instagram story, so definitely check it out. Also, hit me up on Twitter, folks, @ProfessorFUribe. And for all of you Facebook subscribers, do me a favor. Go to the official page for Politically Direct. Like it, of course. And tell your friends to do the same. 1,000 plus likes and counting. Ladies and gentlemen, I must be doing something right because a lot of you enjoy Politically Direct each and every week. So again, without you, my loyal listening audience, this show would not be possible. And once again, our show is brought to you by Insider NJ. Now check out Insider NJ, ladies and gentlemen. I go to their website, www.insidernj.com. And without question, political scene throughout the state of New Jersey, nobody does it better than Insider NJ. It starts with my wonderful teammates at the very top, the editor-in-chief, Max Pizarro. He kind of annoys me from time to time. He has some really annoying and obnoxious, you know, liberal talking points, but I'm sure I drive him crazy too, so I guess it all balances itself out really in the end. But he's a great writer, and certainly you definitely want to check out his columns. In addition to the other outstanding teammates I have here, folks, which include Fred Snowflack, Jay Lasseter, even Alan Steinberg, who drives me crazy with his delusional Trump derangement syndrome, I think that he's suffering from. But again, everyone's entitled to their opinion, not their own facts, but certainly their opinions. And I think, you know, Alan Steinberg certainly is not shy in expressing them. And neither am I on this program, of course, folks. But I'm proud to be part of the Insider NJ family. So again, once you go on the website, upper right-hand corner, you'll see the subscribe button. Do me a favor, click on it. And you'll be automatically enrolled in the morning intelligence briefing. And when you want to find out what's going on in Trenton or even in national politics, Insider NJ gives you the scoop. And once again, the best journalism anywhere in the state of New Jersey. Once again, Check them out on Facebook and like them. Don't forget to follow them on Twitter. Again, ladies and gentlemen, www.insidernj.com. Don't forget to start and end your day with Insider NJ. As a reminder, ladies and gentlemen, the opinions and views expressed every week here on Politically Direct are mine and mine alone. They do not represent those of Insider NJ, the management, the journalists, the staff, or our sponsors. Well, once again, ladies and gentlemen, I appreciate you tuning in here this week. We've got a great guest coming up in just a few moments. But I do want to take this opportunity before I bring on my guest to remind you all it is October and it is Breast Cancer Awareness Month. And certainly, without a doubt, you know, breast cancer has touched our lives in one form or another. And hey, listen, it's a horrific, horrific illness. You know, I've seen it affect people that I care about firsthand. I've been fortunate enough within my own family to not be affected per se, but a lot of, you know, friends and, you know, even colleagues that have suffered. But that's why I do my part every year, folks. Participate in the Making Strides Walk every year in Jersey City. Now, this year will be a little bit different because of COVID-19. I believe it will be a virtual walk. I am raising funds as I usually do every year, but unfortunately, I won't be having my annual event, which has scored not only a tremendous turnout, but great, great fundraising results. And since 2008, you'll be happy to know that I have raised $50,348. That's right, folks, $50,348 to benefit the American Cancer Society and, more importantly, the Making Strides Against Breast Cancer campaign. I'm hoping maybe you'll decide to, you know, donate this year to me online. Every donation is safe, secure, and tax deductible. And as a reminder, you can just look me up, Fernando Uribe, Making Strides, and of course, A Professor's Quest to Save Breasts. And it's on my Facebook, it's on my Twitter, it's on my Instagram. Again, every single dollar raised this year during Breast Cancer Awareness Month, folks, is to benefit the American Cancer Society and, of course, Making Strides Against Breast Cancer. I'll be having a great event this Saturday. The weather looks to be cooperating with us, and it'll be a great partnership with the Union City PBA Local 8, which I'm so proud to be a part of. And once again, you know, it's coming up this Saturday, October the 17th, and it is something you definitely do not want to miss out on, folks. It'll be from 10 a.m. until 3 p.m., the Union City PBA Breast Cancer Charity event located at 49th Street and Bergen Line Avenue in northern Hudson County, right across from the Hudson-Bergen Light Rail stop on Bergen Line Avenue. I'll be there from 10 a.m. until 3 p.m. with the brave men and women of the Union City Police Department, and more specifically, the local PBA number 8, out there collecting donations, selling T-shirts, again, with all proceeds, benefiting the American Cancer Society and Making Strides Against Breast Cancer. So if you can come out, as I said, this Saturday to the Union City PBA, Local 8, again, this Saturday, October 17th, from 10 a.m. until 3 p.m., right across the Hudson-Bergen Light Rail stop, as I mentioned before, 49th Street and Bergen Line Avenue in Union City. I'll be out there with the, again, great men and women in blue doing our part to help defeat breast cancer once and for all. So I appreciate that. And also, folks, want to thank you for your support online. As I alluded to at the start of the broadcast, not only is my partnership with Insider NJ something I'm extremely grateful for, as I know that the Graham family are very happy with me, and certainly I'm just proud to be on this team. But you'll be happy again to know that Politically Direct is now a two-time award-winning podcast. As we all know, last year, the Hudson County Latino Foundation bestowed Politically Direct with the Community Service Award, and now this year, the Union City Artist Awards, bestowing Politically Direct with an Excellence in Local Journalism Award. And I can't say enough really about what that means to me, because I take this very seriously. I take this with a great deal of pride to come, you know, every single week here on the program, and to be able to bring you the guests that you're interested in. And we've had some wonderful guests in recent weeks, folks. I mean, let's be very honest here. I mean, I think if you've been able to check out the program, and again, if you haven't checked out recent episodes, hey, what are you waiting for? www.insidernj.com/podcast. That's plural, podcast. And without question, you know, you can see that recent guests have been amazing. Last week, we were able to have the New Jersey LGBT Chamber of Commerce president, Joseph Ringa, on the program. A week before that, we were able to have the NAACP of New Jersey, their communications, press, and publicity chairman, Marcus Sibley, on the program. Certainly, Jeanette Hoffman, a very noted and legendary public affairs consultant here in the state of New Jersey, as well as Al Sullivan, the dean of Hudson County Journalism, and most notably recently Tap Into columnist, as well as New Jersey GOP chairman, Doug Steinhardt, as well as my fellow columnist from Insider NJ, Fred Snowflack, and many, many more. Folks, check out recent episodes, www.insidernj.com/podcast. And the traffic has been great. And again, without you, my low listening audience, this wouldn't be possible. You see what I'm saying? So I owe it all to you for being there since this podcast started in January of 2018. And it's, you know, it was a project to start it, of course, of other media commitments that I had. But you know what? The best thing I ever did was to join the Insider NJ team. And more so, listen, let's be honest about something too. The traffic has been solid since January of 2018 when this podcast started. And not just because of the versatility of guests, but because of you, my listeners. You know, you make it a point to either listen every week live or listen to the replays, once again, on insidernj.com/podcast. And without your support, your feedback, oftentimes very positive and very complimentary, some instances, not many, some negative comments, some backlash for some views I've taken, which, folks, let's be very honest, they're not bombastic, they're not hyperbolic, they're not incendiary, but some people call me an agitator, all right? But most people will just call me informative, educational, thought-provoking. Those are the adjectives that resonate with this program, and it's those adjectives that people identify with when it comes to this program. And without you, again, my low listening audience, you know, without you, the people, this just wouldn't happen. It's that simple. Okay. Without you, the listeners, this podcast wouldn't be on the air. And without you, the listeners, clicking on the links, clicking on Insider NJ, telling Insider NJ how much I love the podcast, guess what? Insider NJ would have no qualms whatsoever about letting me go, but they have it. And there's a reason for that, folks. Because people respect this podcast. They may not like everything I have to say. And I understand there are some on the left and even like progressives or radical left people who may not like what I have to say. I get it. Sometimes hearing common sense, hearing facts, and hearing the truth is problematic. I understand that. You know, it's not for everybody. It's not everyone's, you know, particular cup of tea or brand of vodka, as they say. But that's what I'll do here, folks. And I've never lied to you since this program has started in January of 2018. And I'll continue to not lie to you because, hey, if I start lying to you, why would you trust this podcast? Again, it's just something I won't do. I'm not going to compromise myself and tell you something that isn't true. I'm going to come on this program every single week and give you the facts. And, you know, listen, you're all grown-ass people. You can make your own decisions. But there's a reason why this podcast has lasted as long as it has and will continue to do so here on insidernj.com/podcast. So, you know, and without a doubt, ladies and gentlemen, it's something that, you know, I'm extremely humbled about having won another award for this podcast. And listen, for all of you that know who I am and know me personally, I am not the most humble person. I'm probably the least humble person you'll ever meet in your life. And that's okay. That's just me. You know, I'm a very confident guy. Some people say I border on arrogant. I call it confidence. Some people call it, you know, smug. I call it secure. Some people call it, condescending. I call it education. And, you know, everyone's going to have their own opinions, and that's fine. But without question, you know, getting that second award here on the podcast makes a big deal to me. And being able to do that really is something that I can't say enough is, you know, noteworthy here on the podcast. So, folks, remember, coming up in the next few weeks, if you have any suggestions for guests or topics, write to me, politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. Certainly, you know, it is with, listen, your feedback is what helps make this program. you know, what guests, trust me, I've been trying to get the governor on. I've been trying to get state Senate president Steve Sweeney on, even Assembly Speaker Coughlin on. You know, I'm well known around the state and I have some sort of outreach, but sometimes it's hard to get those really high up. Trust me, ladies and gentlemen, I'm trying. And trust me, I'm trying for you because I know you want to hear from them and you want to hear what they have to say. And of course, I can't say enough as well about my other media platforms. Of course, Monday nights, as I've mentioned to you, live with Eisen NJ. You can check out Real Talk with Fernandia Uribe at www.eisennj.org/real-talk. We got a brand new intro premiering this Monday. We got great guests all throughout the month of October. And of course, we have great guests throughout the month of November. So definitely want to check out Real Talk with Fernandia Uribe on Monday nights, streaming live at 7 p.m. via Eyes on NJ. And of course, here on the podcast every week, folks, I bring you the exclusives that nobody else will because, hey, these guests, these really important people, they want to talk to me just like I want to talk to them because it's important to have discussions. And in this polarizing political climate, folks, it's about having a conversation. It's about being rational and calm, not screaming over each other, not talking over each other. It's about speaking. And that's what we do here on the podcast. And of course, joining me here today exclusively is the distinguished executive director of the League of Women Voters of New Jersey. You can check out their website at www.lwvnj.org. I mean, that's a mouthful there. So again, www.lwvnj.org. And their executive director, Ms. Jessie Burns, joins you right here on Politically Direct. Jessie, how are you?
Hi, thanks for having me.
No, it's great to have you on here, Ms. Burns. You know, listen, one of the things on this podcast here with Insider NJ is I bring in exclusives. People want to know about the movers and shakers in New Jersey politics. And, of course, you're one of them, Ms. Burns. And before we begin, certainly, what can you tell our listeners about how you got involved with the League of Women Voters of New Jersey? And maybe sort of like a brief history about the significance of this organization.
Yeah, sure. So the League of Women Voters was founded by the same suffragists that worked to pass the 19th Amendment. So we began in 1920 as a mighty political experiment, they said, designed to help 20 million women carry out their new responsibility as voters and to, you know, go beyond the ballot booth even and get fully involved in public and political life. So 100 years later, we're celebrating our 100th anniversary this year. We continue to fight for a more inclusive, participatory democracy.
Okay, fair enough. And again, folks, check out their website. And as I like to do with all of my guests from any organization, folks, once you go on there, you'll see the donate button on the upper right-hand corner. Hey, I know a lot of us are going back to work, thankfully, as the economy is recovering. You know what? If you're going to work every day and you get a coffee and a Danish or a croissant, do me a favor, folks. Instead of doing it 5 days a week, maybe do it 3 days a week. So when those other 2 days, add them up. And at the end of the month, guess what? Click on the donate button and do your part and help out the League of Women Voters in New Jersey. Every single dollar, folks, goes a long way to help them out. So, Jessie, I wanted to do my part, plug you and the organization. I do that for everybody because I'm a gentleman and because we're all about fairness here on the podcast. You know what I'm saying? So I wanted to do that for you. Jessie, let me ask you this because it seems that, here in New Jersey, like everywhere in the country, it's a really polarizing political climate that we're living in. It's about 19 days to go until Election Day. We'll talk about national politics in a minute, but here in New Jersey, what do you see, again, as executive director of the LWV here in the Garden State as probably the most pressing issues?
Sure. So, I mean, obviously a lot of our focus right now, this close to election, has been on voting. And we are a multi-issue organization, so we do advocacy work in a number of different areas that aren't, traditionally women-focused areas. But we have been spending a lot of time making sure that everybody knows all the information they need to cast a ballot. And I think that, you know, your point about the political climate right now, I do want to make sure that, you know, discussions around, you know, what the election looks like, what the candidates look like, kind of the partisan back and forth, doesn't keep anybody from casting their ballot this election or keep them away from the polls. So we have been spending a lot of time on voter education.
You know what? And that's amazing, because I think we certainly need that as an educator during the day. That's what pays my bills. I'm a big advocate for that. I say that to my students constantly about educating yourselves. I've been doing it even pre-COVID, and certainly I think every activist organization is doing their part. I have to ask you, though, because, you know, Jesse, to be very fair, we know that the League of Women Voters per se is a nonpartisan organization. But it seems that whenever we talk about activism and advocacy groups, it's kind of hard to avoid the obvious, right? Well, where does this organization stand on the ideological spectrum? Is that something that you've had to tackle or battle when it comes to the perception of the League of Women Voters of New Jersey? Or is it just something that, as you said, in the 100 years since the organization was founded, that there's a constant sort of struggle with how to define the organization or the perception of it?
Well, I think it's funny because the accusations of the league being partisan, it goes back on and forth depending on who we don't agree with at the time. So, mm-hmm. you know, I've received from both sides of the aisle folks saying that we are not that we're not nonpartisan. So it's just interesting. And the way that the league operates is we're a membership organization, and the grassroots membership, they kind of pick policy issues that they want to study. Then they study the pros and cons of what those issues are, and then they do a consensus process to the other members. The members have community meetings. They discuss these issues. They discuss the pros and cons. They kind of go through the sheet of the pros and cons and decide as a group where that local league stands. And then we all come together at a convention and we adopt a policy position. So the way that we, you know, advocate on issues is really not a partisan process. It's a community-based process. Some of our leagues lean heavily Republican, and some of our leagues lean heavily Democratic, depending on where they are in the state. So it's an interesting process, and our policies themselves, you know, I always say, well, it's not up to me which side of the aisle is going to agree to the position we come to. Right now, we're opposing a ballot question that has a lot of Democratic support, for example. So it goes back and forth, and it has for the last 100 years.
Well, it's interesting you bring that up. So you just mentioned that the League of Women Voters in New Jersey are opposing a ballot initiative that seems to have a lot of support among the Democratic Party. What is it exactly that you can share with our listeners, when it comes to what makes this issue, you know, such a divide?
Yeah, so the ballot question I'm referencing is the public question number 3, which is on redistricting. And redistricting is just, you know, so foundational. It's such a building block to the rest of our democracy. It's so important. So we have a coalition that's led by the league called Fair Districts New Jersey that has been working for many years for redistricting reform in the state. So this ballot question is meant to be in response to the pandemic's possible impact on the census timeline for delivery of the data to us. But however, it goes too far. It would be permanent, and it might not even be necessary. We don't know when we're going to get the data at this point. So this large coalition, which includes a lot of good government social justice groups, have come out in opposition to this particular question because it's this permanent change to the one-time problem with pandemic. Every time we receive data later than February 15th, so if we receive data February 16th at 2041, it's going to trigger this using the existing maps for an additional 2 years. The February 15th date is, there's no obligation for the Census Bureau to provide us the data by February 15th. That's a courtesy date. In fact, in 2001, we received it later than that. So that's not really a pandemic-specific issue. And we also are concerned about how much it's going to dilute the power of New Jersey's diverse communities. Using the map for an additional 2 years won't reflect the population growth of, specifically Latinx and Asian populations that have grown by over 20% in our state. So it's problematic, and we are urging voters to vote no on that particular question.
Now, Jesse, I'm not sure if there's any preliminary polling or any insiders in Trenton that can tell you or confirm this, but how's it looking on that specific ballot question? Do you think it's going to work out, let's say, in the favor you're hoping for and also in favor of the League of Women Voters of New Jersey, or is it still up in the air?
So there hasn't been any kind of, significant funding on either side of this question. There's no polling that I've seen. There hasn't been a lot of attention to it. So I think that it's still pretty much up in the air. There's complications, a lot of folks are voting vote by mail, maybe for the first time, and they're seeing ballot questions in a different way.
Sure.
There's been like a couple of lines and then an insert for a lot of folks. It's a complicated question. Redistricting is always kind of complicated, so voters aren't quite sure what it's asking. There's two other questions on the ballot. The first question is getting a lot of attention for
sure.
Marijuana. And then the second question is not really that controversial. So I think the first question is getting more attention. And then we're also obviously in the middle of a pandemic and a presidential election and all of us trying to figure out kind of just our day-to-day, how we're going to, take care of our kids, our worrying about our health, our jobs. It has not been an easy, not just for the ballot question, but for all the voter education, for all the information we're trying to help people with. It hasn't been the easiest environment for anybody to operate in.
You're right about that. And I'm glad you brought up, obviously, because we know because of the pandemic, Governor Phil Murphy, via executive order, decided that coming up here in the Garden State, vote by mail would be the only option we have, unless there are certain, extreme circumstances. I think if you have a disability, perhaps maybe that's what gets you, makes it permissible to vote in person, but I think that's very limited as well. I have to ask you, because again, I don't like to think this is a partisan issue, Jesse, but it just seems that, there's enough out there in literature, and this is probably more where, and I don't apologize for being a center-right guy, but it just seems like I'm getting a lot of ammunition here because we're seeing the disasters that are vote by mail. We're seeing things crop up in New Jersey. We're seeing issues pop up in Pennsylvania. And it's just like, why are we doing this? If we can stand online at the motor vehicle, we can go and stand outside Costco and Walmart and practice social distancing and do everything else we're supposed to be doing, Jesse. Why is the governor forcing this on us when we know that vote by mail has the potential, let's be honest, a lot of chicanery and a lot of like shady stuff? I don't understand why that's such a polarizing statement for me to make or anybody else.
Yeah, so I think that it's important to kind of stress that you started out saying, it's all vote by mail. And it's important to say that there is in-person voting available using the paper provisional ballots. And the reason I say that is because for the folks that want to do the in-person provisional ballot, I want to make sure that they understand that there's a lot of kind of misconception that their provisional ballot won't be counted. And that's just not true. Provisional ballots are counted. So again, when I talk about wanting to make sure that folks understand their options, I understand that not everybody is happy with what the options are, but it is important to know, to not say like, it's the vote by mail is your only option. Because in-person options are important for a number of reasons. What if somebody, doesn't get their ballot and they need to get a provisional ballot and their polling location is close to their house? What if somebody just doesn't want to use the vote by mail ballot for some reason and they want to go to their polling location, ask a question of their poll worker and get the paper ballot? So it's important for everybody to know that, there will be one polling place, at least one polling place per town. It might not be your normal polling place, so make sure you check before you go. I don't want voters to encounter an additional obstacle where they go to their normal polling place and it's closed and then they don't know what to do. I want to make sure that folks know, check where your place will be and that that is an option for you.
You know what? You're a wealth of information, Jesse, and I'm glad you pointed that out to my audience here today because I think it's really, really important to be as clear-cut and transparent here because it is a really shaky time. You know, again, I take voting very seriously. It's something that is sacred to me and my family as my being the son of a Cuban mother, losing the right to vote because of socialism and communism is something that, you know, I was taught since I was a child. So I value voting and how important it is to our democracy. And I think you alluded to that earlier. I do want to ask you too, again, as I've been checking out the website, doing my homework here as a journalist here for the show, obviously we know that voting is center for democracy, as you just mentioned before. I'm not sure if the League of Women Voters has a stance on this per se, but it seems that whenever a conversation comes up about voting rights or concept of voter suppression, I think this is, again, once again, the center-right guy in me comes out and says, you know, there really doesn't seem to be the hysteria that I think is being perpetrated out there about voter suppression. I mean, here in New Jersey, there are a plethora, I think, of resources people can have if they wish to go vote. And whenever we hear the concept of, oh, you know, asking for an ID is racist or asking for an ID is unnecessary, I understand voting is a right bestowed to us by the Constitution, but it just seems like commonsensical, though, Jesse, like everything else we need to do in society and life, we need an ID. We kind of need to verify who we are to make sure it's legitimate. I don't understand, and maybe you can help me with this. Am I wrong here in just saying, listen, if we need an ID to vote, and if we can sort of not impose that, but legislate that, what's the big deal? I mean, getting an ID is not difficult. It's not expensive, per se, in New Jersey. I'll give you an example. If you do not drive a motor vehicle and you just simply need an ID at your local MVC, it's $24. So if you save a dollar a month for the next 2 years, mind you, your license is renewed every 4 years. If you just save a dollar a month for 24 straight months, there's your ID. I don't understand what's so hard, A, to get an ID, and B, if we want to ask for an ID, I don't think it's unreasonable. Jesse, am I wrong?
So I do want to point out that there is voter identification eligibility being done. So there is a step here that is being done that's important to know. When you register to vote, you are providing some ID. But you mentioned cost and you did mention an amount. So that is a barrier. Any cost is a barrier to voter ID. I think too that there's the truth is that just millions of Americans don't have the ID. So I think that the number, I'm trying to remember exactly what it is, it's around 10% of U.S. citizens don't have government-issued photo identification like you're talking about. Mm-hmm. And in New Jersey, there's some – so if you register to vote using your voter registration – I'm sorry, your driver's license number – your MVC non-driver, or if you don't have those, if you're one of those folks that don't have the government issued like MVC ID, use your social security number. And it goes through the process. So they check your eligibility to add you to the rolls. If for some reason, let's say you mess up the numbers or it doesn't check out, when you show up to a polling place, they do require you to show some form of identification because they couldn't verify it when you registered. So it's a myth to think that there's no ID being required. What you're talking about is every time you vote showing up and producing identification, which is something that you've already gone through in the voter registration process.
Okay, and I'm glad you outlined that for us here in terms of the fundamental difference, but it seems like the talking point I just mentioned seems to be greeted a lot, Jesse, with, oh, Fernando, you're a racist. Oh, Fernando, you're exclusionary. Oh, Fernando, you're just being bigoted. Jesse, I don't think I am. I think I'm just being commonsensical. I just think something like this gets really, really politicized. And I just want to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah, so I mean, I obviously didn't call you a racist. I understand what you're saying, but I want to talk about why that folks might think that way. And it's because of the way that the voter ID laws have been used kind of historically, and they just have seemed, you know, to see a reduced voter turnout among, you know, vote people of color. And I think that's where that's coming from, because when you impose these voter ID laws, then you see it have a greater impact on communities of color. So I think it's something like a quarter of, when I talk about 10%, and it might be 11 or something like that, it's around 10% of folks not having a government issued ID. It's up to, you know, 25% of that group are, I think, specifically Black voters. So it comes down to who the voter ID laws end up impacting the most and keeping away from the polls. So I think that's where that is coming from.
Okay, interesting. And certainly, again, the reason I wanted to ask is I know that, like any other advocacy group, this comes up in, you know, it comes up a lot in discussion. And certainly pre-COVID, whenever you've had workshops or symposiums, I'm sure this is something that you're faced with, being the executive director of the League of Women Voters of New Jersey. And certainly whenever you're doing, even not during COVID, maybe you're doing Zoom sessions and talking about voting rights or talking about voting questions on how to vote, like you just outlined for us exactly the options that we have. I'm sure that not necessarily you've been met with backlash, but I'm sure there's been a tsunami of questions directed at your feet, right, at some point.
Yeah, you know, I love the fact that you're talking. So I never get the opportunity to talk about non-COVID voting stuff. So I love the fact that you're doing that, right? Because I think that we have an opportunity here to have a policy conversation after we kind of come out of this about what infrastructure improvements to the voting process can we start to look at. And I'm not saying which way we go, but I'm saying things like, you know, if people are upset about not being able to vote on the machine, what kind of infrastructure can we put in place that could allow for that in the future? You know, and that would be something like, what do electronic poll books look like, and how much would that cost, and what are the pros and cons there? And having these kind of conversations that are, you know, about the future of what voting looks like and lessons learned, I think are super, super important. And there was another point, not just about poll books. You know, there's a conversation around early voting, right? And what that should look like. And I think that we've seen bipartisan support around the concept of allowing for more early voting in our state. So I look forward to having a good conversation about the balance there. There's conversations about voting rolls, and everybody agrees that voting rolls need to be maintained, updated, and conversations about like what that looks like and how we do a great job of maintaining our voting rolls without, you know, taking eligible voters off. So all of these kind of conversations, I think are going to be really, really kind of at the forefront coming out of this election, and a real opportunity for us to have a conversation about what we can be doing better going forward.
Well, you know what? It's interesting you bring that up, Jesse, because as an academic, I'm all about policy. It was one of my favorite subjects during graduate school. I'm very much a policy guy. I always like having discussions about policy prescriptions when it comes to, discussing this, whether it's issues about voting, infrastructure, when it comes to voting, voting rights. And I'm always a fan of that. So when I get to talk to someone like you, that's really knowledgeable on this stuff, like that's why I welcome guests like you on this podcast, you know, because I think my audience and there aren't a lot of other podcasts in the state of New Jersey that are covering issues like this. So when I'm able to bring someone like you on this program, again, it's a benefit to our listeners to get this perspective, because you really don't hear this, I think, in other mainstream sort of news in the state of New Jersey, whether it's online news, whether it's podcasts, or just, you know, local websites. I don't think you're really seeing these conversations taking place.
And I think that's, you know, it's unfortunate. And, you know, for example, you and I are going to disagree about voter ID. We're not going to come out in the same place on that. But the conversation mm-hmm. we mm-hmm. just had on it was important. It wasn't two people kind of polar opposite sides screaming at each other, mm-hmm. refusing to, you know, hear what the other person is saying. And I think that sometimes we see that, you know, a bit too much and the national conversation around everything, like not just elections,
yeah.
but everything. And
yeah, that's
I started
yeah,
with the League
right.
when I was 25 years old. I started this job, so it was 13 years ago. And I remember kind of entering this environment with the organization is mostly women. It's changing, but at the time it was mostly women, mostly older. And again, that's changing as well. It's our organization is much more diverse in a lot of ways than it was 13 years ago. But these, you know, kind of, I thought they were like intellectual giants sitting down in people's living rooms and going through policy and having these in-depth conversations, like, what does this mean, you know, for the state budget? Where would the money come from? Where would you take it from? What would this mean for this group of people? What would the opposition mean? What are their points and which ones are right? You know, having those kind of conversations, I think it's really, really rare. And it's something that happens every day in the League, you know, in living room, well, not now in Zoom meetings, but
sure.
living rooms across the state. And I feel really privileged to be able to kind of learn from that, because I think, you know, there's it's understandable, particularly as we deal in this really high stress time and high stress environment, for us to kind of have our knee jerk emotional reactions to things.
Sure.
But that doesn't make good policy, right? So I feel privileged to be able to spend time with my membership and learn from them and from their kind of reasoned civil dialogue.
No, absolutely. And again, as I mentioned at the onset of the program, dialogue is really important. I think it's one of the reasons why this podcast is quite popular, not just because it's with Insider NJ, but because people enjoy it. People enjoy hearing adults having civil conversations. You know, we can agree to disagree, but if we're able to have sound conversations about policy prescriptions when it comes to topics, I think it's worthwhile and meaningful. So, I mean, again, I'm grateful for that, to have you on here. Jesse, let me ask you, because going back to the ballot question, I know that, you know, I'm looking at the website here, and for our listeners, again, folks, check out www.lwvnj.org. You can scroll down, you'll see the Fair Districts in New Jersey part of the website. Jesse, has there been any legislative support for the League of Women Voters as it pertains to their stance on this issue? Are there legislators or other activists or advocacy groups that are coming out and saying, hey, you know what, the League of Women Voters of New Jersey, they're right on this, and I think we need to vote no on question three? Have you gotten a good amount of support, or what's it been like?
Yeah, so, I mean, I think that the legislature has been divided along party lines on this. So the Republicans are opposed, and the Democrats, I don't know about the individual members, but in general, that's where it's been kind of divided, right, are in favor of this question. So in some of the op-eds that we've seen, I believe that maybe Senator Bateman put something out today. They have referenced that good government organizations, specifically the League of Women Voters, is opposed and urging voters to vote no on this question. But the groups that are part of this, that have signed on to this letter, are really diverse. I mean, we have groups like the New Jersey Institute for Social Justice and mm-hmm. Latino Justice and LUPE. So, you know, groups that are primarily focused on advocating for communities of color. And then we have groups like Indivisible Cranberry, Stand Central NJ, Good Government Coalition of New Jersey, some of these groups that form to kind of make sure that citizens and others have the opportunity to really get involved in government, good government groups, the New Jersey policy perspectives on this, NJ Citizen Action. The National Association of Social Workers, New Jersey chapter, is joining us in opposition. Blue Wave New Jersey is joining us in opposition. So it's not, when I say that the Democratic legislators are in support, it doesn't mean that everybody that is on the, you know, kind of the working for Democrat Party interests is also in support.
Sure.
So it's interesting. It's been there's environmental groups on there too. I mean, I don't mean to ramble. It's just there's been so many great partners: Water Spirit, League of Conservation Voters, Clean Water Action. A lot of groups have come out in opposition to this question.
Well, it's interesting because the list you just provided me here is very diverse, I would say, ideologically. I don't think there's an easy way to sort of paint with a broad brush here, because I think they're very different organizations here with very different sort of political stances that they've taken on this issue. So it's interesting to see, as you just alluded to, the diversity there in terms of support when it comes to voting no on question three. Jesse, you know, by day, I'm an educator. Part of my job is grading, and certainly here in New Jersey, a lot of New Jerseyans, homeowners, taxpayers alike, all have an opinion at some point about Governor Murphy during this pandemic. And let me ask Jesse Burns, not the executive director, let me ask Jesse Burns, the mom, let me ask Jesse Burns, the homeowner, the taxpayer, what are your thoughts? You know, what grade would you give Governor Murphy during this pandemic? Because it seems like people's opinions are all over the place here in New Jersey.
Yeah, you know, what's funny is that because my organization is so so nonpartisan, I have never even thought of it. I don't think about like grading elected officials in that kind of way. Of course, I vote and I examine kind of who I most agree with on policy, things like that as a person. But in my political public life, it's just not something I contemplate.
Okay.
I don't know in which piece. Like, there's been a lot, I think, about this election that he has done right. The league has been in support of a lot of the decisions that the governor and the legislature have made regarding how to do democracy in a pandemic. All of our recommendations haven't been accepted. For example, we really urge to not consolidate polling places because we think that having in-person options is important, and having a lot of them is important. So
yeah,
that wasn't
fair.
Accepted. So there's pros and cons. You know, my kid isn't in school yet, so I don't know on that. I feel lucky that I have my child's still too young to have to grapple with this, I think, really difficult position that folks are in about how do they balance their child's education and school. I don't own a business, you know, so I think that that's another thing. I feel like it must be very hard to grapple between, is my restaurant going to fail and I'm not going to be able to support my family? And I don't have these particular personal concerns, and I'm spending, you know, 80 something hours a week on just being Jesse Burns, executive director. How do I get voting information out? That it hasn't really been top of my mind to grade how the governor might be doing in so many different areas of this pandemic.
I mean, it's fair. Again, I have to ask the question. You know, I like to sort of ask thought-provoking questions here on the program, and certainly, you know, it's something that sort of continues the dialogue. Jesse, certainly pre-COVID, We know that with any nonpartisan, nonprofit organization, fundraising is a challenge, I'm sure even more so. During this pandemic, it's been even more of a struggle. What can you share with our audience, for example, and I say this to my students all the time because I teach in academia, for those of you that are interested in getting into nonprofit work, is it something right now that you would recommend? And B, you know, how are you, again, as the executive director of one of the more, you know, foremost well-known advocacy groups in New Jersey, how have you been able to coordinate with your executive board and membership when it comes to fundraising? It has to be a challenge, I think.
Yeah, so it was, you know, it's our centennial year, and we were going to have this giant gala, which obviously we canceled. We had a couple of other smaller membership fundraising events planned to celebrate our history and our grassroots membership, and we had it canceled as well. So I think our fundraising has looked different. We still do have a centennial campaign because, you know, we are still celebrating 100 years. We're still trying to build organizational mm-hmm. power for the next generation of women leaders and voting rights activists. So we're still raising funds. But, you know, our organization isn't that large. We're a staff of four. So it's not super small, but it's not a super big budget either. And I found that right now that there's still people still want to give what they can. And you see it with folks giving to food banks and making sure that people are able to kind of share what they have with people who don't during this pandemic. But you also see it with people giving to organizations like ours, where we're trying to get voter education information out. We were able to, so we still do have some in-person voter education, voter registration efforts happening. They're socially distanced and they're different, but we still have them. We were able to get a lot of information kind of produced and put out onto those tables to reach communities, and we wouldn't have been able to do that at all without people continuing to give and donate to support that work. So it's looked different, but we're still doing okay. We're still going. And as for your other question about getting involved in nonprofits, mm-hmm. it's so fulfilling. I mean, it's a very stressful job, I think, but every day my job looks different. So it's not like I'm doing the same thing every day. Mm-hmm. Every day, even when I lose, and I lose most days, you know, where I feel like I just can't do, I'm not going to achieve what I'm trying to achieve, I still feel like I'm making a difference. I still feel like my work has value. I still feel pride in the folks that I'm, you know, fighting for. And I think that alone is a reason to consider nonprofit work.
Okay. I mean, listen, I'm a philanthropist. I donate to lots of causes. I fundraise for, matter of fact, I talked about it at the onset of this program. I've been a staunch volunteer for the American Cancer Society and making strides against breast cancer. I've been doing it for 13 years now. Every year I have a campaign in October. I love it. It's fulfilling. As you mentioned, I think that's a great word to use when it comes to nonprofit work and philanthropic efforts. When you're looking to help other people, it's something that is rewarding beyond dollars. And so I applaud that. And I certainly can appreciate the amount of time you put into this, because it is laborious. But as you mentioned, if you enjoy what you do, it's never the same sort of routine every day. So I think it's something that is definitely worth keeping an eye out for. Jesse, real quick before I let you go, I know you're a very, very busy woman. I know you're a mom, you're an activist, you're executive director. You wear a lot of hats here. But let me just ask, because I know that like any other nonprofit organization, you are nonpartisan, but some organizations who are nonpartisan sometimes take certain stances. Is the League of Women Voters, have they officially taken a stand coming up for November 3rd? Because I know that on the main page, for example, you know, the League of Women Voters issued a statement regarding, during the summer, the murder of George Floyd from Minneapolis. And certainly it's very clear on the website, you know, the League of Women Voters stands with Black Lives Matter. We know that can be a very polarizing type of statement. It depends on who you ask. But coming up for November 3rd, has the League of Women Voters of New Jersey, have they taken a specific stance on endorsing candidates, whether it be at the federal level or, you know, for presidency, House races, Senate, whatever? Is that something that the League has done, or is the League still continuing to sort of stay out of that?
We don't. Yeah, so we don't endorse or oppose candidates running for office. We never have. We don't do it. And the League, so we have a C4 organization where we do some of this advocacy and lobbying work out of. But unlike other C4s, we don't endorse or oppose candidates. We will take positions on ballot questions every once in a while. We haven't taken a position in many years before coming out in opposition of this particular ballot question. But we don't endorse or oppose candidates. A lot of the work we do is, and I think what people probably know us best for, are things like candidate debates and candidate questionnaires and things like that. So when we say that we're not supporting a candidate and we invite them to a debate and we're going to give them, you know, fair and reasonable questions, we don't want to have a debate where we're trying to trap one side or the other into agreeing with us. That's not how we operate, and we take that very seriously.
Okay. Well, I mean, the reason I have to ask you is because, again, some organizations, you know, maybe take a side or the membership somehow, not that they leak anything, but that, you know, in a subtle way, you can kind of guess where the membership of an organization is leaning towards, but and some are very overt about it and some are not. So I think certainly for my listeners tonight, I think, you've laid out the case of how nonpartisan the League of Women Voters are. Before I let you go, again, I want to thank you for your time because I know you're very busy. And I know that my listeners here via Insider NJ, which I hope you read, by the way. I mean, it's very reputable, Jesse.
Yes, of course, yes. And I really appreciate the opportunity to be here today.
No, absolutely. Before I let you go, though, we know that COVID right now is occupying so much of our existence. We're hoping that once 2021 comes around, maybe, you know, we can do a reboot and, God, you know, maybe we can move forward and get back to some sort of normalcy. Is there anything that the League of Women Voters of New Jersey is really looking forward to in 2021 with any events or any policy platforms that are looking to take or any mission statements or anything? What can you tell our listeners today about what the outlook is for the League of Women Voters in 2021?
Yeah, it's such a hard question, right? Because everything always feels so uncertain. But I think that, as I talked about before, this coming back together and having a conversation about how we can improve elections in New Jersey, what it should look like going forward, what kind of investments we should make into updating our infrastructure, how we can improve voters' confidence in the system. I'm really looking forward to sitting down and having that kind of conversation so that as we move forward, you know, we're investing, again, funding and resources and the things we need for things like electronic poll books, early voting, voter verified voting paper trails for voting machines. I think that that's going to be a really interesting and important conversation after this election.
Okay, and I get, obviously this election has been exhausting. I mean, I can't wait until it's over. I think it's been draining our souls. It's been really divisive on social media. I'm sure that, you know, hey, people have lost friendships and acquaintances over how polarizing this election has been. We'll see what happens on the morning of November 4th, because as we all know, life continues. We got to continue paying bills. We got to continue doing our work. We got to continue with our lives. So I think it'll be very interesting times coming up in 19 days. And, of course, for the rest of the year. Jesse, real quick, any specific links or social media feeds, anything you want to share with our listeners tonight concerning the League of Women Voters in New Jersey?
Thank you for sharing out our website. I do encourage people to visit that, lwvnj.org. In addition, we run vote411.org, which is our voter's guide. So if you go to that site and you enter your address, your ballot will come up. We've asked candidates running some, you know, general policy questions, and the candidates that responded, their responses will appear. There's also information about how to participate, how to vote, what looks different this year as a result of COVID, how to find your polling place, all sorts of great information on vote411.org. And that's a national site, so that exists for every state. No matter where you are in the country, you can find good information on vote411.
Okay. Well, again, Jesse, I know my listeners will make their own determination about the League of Women Voters of New Jersey. Certainly, there's a lot to process. Again, as you mentioned about the ballot question coming up, and certainly issues that the league takes upon itself to advocate for and to rally for. So I appreciate your time. And do me a favor. I know that I'll be uploading this on the Insider NJ website later today, if not tonight. And do me a favor. It sounds like you're a fan of Politically Direct with Fernanda Uribe, and I hope you'll be back on again soon.
Yeah, I'd love to come back, and thank you so much for having me, and I appreciate the opportunity to have this conversation.
Absolutely. And do me a favor, share the link when it's up later on tonight. God bless you. Stay healthy. Stay well. God bless your family, obviously, during COVID. And we'll talk to you again soon here on Politically Direct.
Thank you so much. Same to you. Bye-bye.
Have a good one. Have a good one. Folks, what a great episode here tonight, right? I mean, it's, you know, I always enjoy having different guests on when it comes to, you know, organizations and their advocacy and what they're doing. And I think, you know, certainly the League of Women Voters of New Jersey is no different. Again, you can check out their website and, you know, you can figure out what you think about the organization or their aims and goals, just like every other organization that I feature on this program. And, you know, again, you can make your own determination. You're a smart group of boys and girls here who tune in every week on insidernj.com/podcast. And I think you'll definitely, you know, appreciate what, you know, was discussed today. And certainly, again, you can make your own determination as to where you sit on the political spectrum, whether it's issues that were discussed today or any of the ones in previous episodes. So, folks, that's our show for this week. If you missed any part of the broadcast, don't sweat it. You can listen to this episode in its entirety and others by going to www.insidernj.com/podcasts. And you can listen to it from any PC, Mac, smartphone, or tablet. You can write the show's inbox at any time, folks, politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. Don't forget also to check out Politically Direct on Instagram at Politically Direct NJ, and also my own Instagram at Professor Fernanda Uribe. Maybe you enjoy my Instagram stories, some politically incorrect humor, some memes, sports, politics, whatever, pro wrestling. It's all there for you. Hit me up on Twitter when you can, ladies and gentlemen, at Professor F. Uribe. For all you Facebook subscribers, again, 1,000 plus likes and counting for the official page for Politically Direct on Facebook. Like it, share it, and tell your friends to do the same. And once again, you can check out all the excellent journalism brought to you by Insider NJ by going to the website, www.insidernj.com. And it's the best coverage of the political scene, not just in the state of New Jersey, but anything even during the national political scene as well. Nobody does it better, folks, than Insider NJ. It starts with our editor-in-chief, who, you know, from time to time kind of drives me crazy with some of his liberal rants. But I'm sure I drive him crazy with some of my moderate to center-right conservative rants. So I guess it balances itself out. But again, Max Pizarro, one of the best journalists in the state of New Jersey. You want to definitely check out his columns at www.insidernj.com. Of course, Fred Snowflack, along with Jay Lasseter, even Alan Steinberg, who sometimes drives me crazy as well with his delusional rants, with, you know, the Trump derangement syndrome that seems to be pervasive with Alan. But you know what? He's a really good writer. He's very interesting and entertaining. Don't agree with almost anything he has to say, but I will, you know, support my teammates because we are a family here at Insider NJ. Make sure you like Insider NJ on Facebook and follow them on Twitter. Don't forget to start and end your day with Insider NJ. That's our show for this week, ladies and gentlemen. Again, you check out today's episode. Again, the executive director, Jesse Burns from the League of Women Voters of New Jersey. Great, great episode here. And I welcome your feedback. So definitely, you know, check it out when possible. And without question, folks, you know, whether it's on your morning commute, whether you're getting your workout in, walking your dog, guess what, you're doing laundry, for my students doing their homework and readings, you know what, take a break, tune in on any PC, Mac, smartphone, or tablet, download it, listen to it anywhere, anytime, and trust me, you'll be happy that you did. And never forget, folks, it's real, it's here. It's the two-time award-winning Politically Direct. Good night. Freehold, New Jersey. All my people out down there in Ocean County, Good stuff there, folks. Again, all my people listening in Freehold, appreciate you tuning into the program. I'll see you next week here on Blog Talk Radio, ladies and gentlemen. And don't forget, let's keep on talking.
Bring it.